This episode of Old Games Old is brought to you by Switch Fix. Switch Fix is a better way to play the Switch on the go. With a sleek, lightweight design, it allows you to plug in your Switch, clip in your Pro Controller, and play comfortably. No more faulty attachments or Nintendo Switch grips. Switch Fix is a game changer. Get your Switch Fix today at getswitchfix.com or join the giveaway by clicking the link down below. There are six ways to win. Through the link, you can subscribe to Chiptooth Gaming, like a CTG video, or visit Switch Fix's Indiegogo page. Share the campaign with your friends, join Switch Fix's exclusive mailing list, and a bonus entry when you do all five. One more time, that's getswitchfix.com or enter the giveaway in the description down below. Now on to the episode. Welcome to the sixth episode of Old Games Old, Chiptooth Gaming's bi-weekly gaming retrospective podcast. You can get the show on youtube.com/chiptoothgaming and the podcast services of your choice. My name is Noah Freskop, and across from me, the San Francisco treat, Eli Shaw.
What's up, world? It's your SF treat.
The one, the only. Tell the people out there what we have now. The glorious thing that Mikey Double D Doherty has bestowed upon us.
We have merch, people.
Do you see this logo right here? You can put that on your body.
Beautiful, in beautiful multicolored color block t-shirts.
It's so obnoxious good. And then ratchet that up a couple notches. That's our shirt, and we're doubling mm-hmm. down on it. It's loud. Yeah, it's proud. Old Games Old now at Teespring. teespring.com/chiptoothgaming.
I believe so.
Yes, I'm gonna double down on that. I'm not, if it's not Teespring, sorry, but not sorry at all.
Our logo is too good to not put on.
I just want it on, apparel. I want like half of my belongings by the end of the year to just be OGO shit, #OGO on Twitter.
Hell yeah, let's get a sticker.
A sticker would be awesome. I would put that on my laptop for sure, because I need to take off a couple of those. Because you know when like something's a good idea in the moment, and then 6 months from it's like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah, I have a Ninja Turtle sticker on my laptop.
That's dope,
I'm 22 years old.
That's true. There's some good... honestly, shout out to the 2003 series. That's probably...
Oh, absolutely.
That and the IDW comics. I unironically enjoy those a lot. Those are great.
I fuck with Ninja Turtles. Custom Robo is a 2004 GameCube game developed by Noise and Nintendo. The studio Noise works in collaboration with Nintendo, but has not put out anything since 2013. This is the fourth entry in the series and is the first game to be released outside of Japan, and it currently sits at a 65 Metacritic, which I'd say is criminally low.
That seems ridiculous. Did critics just shit on this game upon its launch?
I don't know. Like, I'm thinking back on it, when it launched, it was pretty good for the time. Like 2004, what did you really expect out of video games?
That was a great year, though. 2004 was a phenomenal year, and I'd like to go down that, because I could see it kind of just barely falling under the competition. Yeah, 6.5 IGN. Damn, that's surprising, though.
Mm-hmm.
That's really surprising.
It's almost like they didn't see the vision behind it. Like, this is kind of, imagine Pokemon with robots, but the Pokemon that you want, where you can control them and like fight each other, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And like we talk about with every like old franchise that's kind of dead, like there's absolutely a market for this today in 2019.
Oh, totally.
Like, people would eat the shit up, especially with its, if it was at like some kind of co-op nature or something. But yeah, mm-hmm. it would work perfectly for the Switch. So yeah, I'm looking at the list of 2004 games right now, and I totally understand why it kind of flew under the radar. Fucking World of Warcraft, San Andreas, Doom 3, Half-Life 2, Fable, Halo 2, Star Wars Battlefront, Knights of the Old Republic 2, Burnout 3. Like, there were some heavy hitters here. Metal Gear Solid 3, Far Cry, the first one, which is not a very good game. Crash Twinsanity, probably the game of the year.
Probably.
Yeah.
Fuck World
Jack
of Warcraft.
Jack 3. Fuck World of Warcraft.
Oh, Jack 3.
Spider-Man 2. Enough. Like, get out of here. God. Yeah.
Yeah.
2004, underappreciated year. There's a lot of good shit in there. Anyway.
No, yeah. Somehow, in that year, of all of these amazing games, I found the time to pick up Custom Robo and play through the entire thing. And love it. I got in trouble for playing this game.
Oh, no.
Before school. Yeah, I woke up
Oh, no.
You ever, do that thing where you're like, okay, I'm gonna play until I go to bed.
Yeah.
And then I'm gonna play when I get home from school, but I cannot wait that long. That's like a full like 29 hours.
You wake up early and you're like trying to be quiet. You're like trying to tiptoe down. It's like every button on the TV is like the loudest thing you ever heard in your life.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, I got caught right away and, you know, couldn't play video games in the morning ever again.
Ever again. Banned.
No. Banned, yeah. They basically took my shit away.
Man, Custom Robo does that to you.
That good.
I respect that. That's great. That's a great story. I love that, actually. That it just, it totally caused you to, it, you lost everything. What did it cost? Everything. but anyway, so I, as I was looking at gameplay for this, I just realized it's basically if you turn Zone of the Enders into an isometric, like, and gave it, like, more RPG elements, that's literally exactly what it's like. And I can't get it out of my head, even though that is the framework for a lot of mech games, which is just, like, the emphasis on like darting around and just the ranged attacks and the missiles that you have to stop and then fire, like just the, it's the little minutia like that. But what were your first like experiences with the game? Like, did you find it like kind of weird at first, or did it kind of click right off the bat?
I feel like it clicked right off the bat, which is so weird because like I didn't really play a lot of Japanese games as a kid besides like, you know, Pokemon and like and some Nintendo games here and there, but never like, definitely not a deep like RPG at all.
Yeah.
So it was weird to like, I don't know why I picked this game up. I just saw it and was like, oh, this looks cool. GameCube, robots. Sure, let's do it.
Get in there.
And then, yeah, it just throws you in like, all right, you're this kid. It's the typical like JRPG story. You're a kid, your dad dies, your dad's final wish was you become this great champion.
Why do you gotta put that on me, dad? What the fuck?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then, you know, kid takes down a whole evil organization and also kills this evil robot entity that it like possesses some toys or something. It's such a weird story.
That's
like the government's involved too.
The government's always recruiting people. They're always like the guys in the suits with the fucking briefcases. They're like, they're just like in the corner from the shadows, like the G-Man from Half-Life. It's exactly what it's like.
But like, dude, this is totally, if you like Pokemon, like this is very similar to Pokemon in structure, but instead of like animals, it's robots.
And that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Would Digimon be like the cross between these with like infusing animals with technology?
I mean,
it's not the same thing. I know
it's not
like,
the same thing. No.
I don't know what I was thinking.
But. Yeah, it's like everyone's very much like separated from the little robots. Like they're little toys basically that you're controlling in like a arena.
Yeah, it's like Gundam Build Fighters.
Yeah, it's more like Beyblades, I'd say, than anything.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, the gameplay is all there. The JRPG kind of structure is all there. Like, it's the very stereotypical, like, anime face and dialogue blurbs pop-up type of experience.
Absolutely.
Why do you think it never really took off like some of the other Nintendo IPs? Because, like, it has all the ingredients. Everything's there. It just never really kicked off.
No, I really don't know. And, like, this is not the first entry of it. It wasn't just, like, a one and done. There was, like, this is the fourth one, and they made another one afterwards, I think, for, like, the DS or something. Like,
yeah, there's definitely a DS one.
Yeah, I don't know why Nintendo just dropped the IP and never, like, came back, even, like, with the Wii, you know, Wii U, 3DS. There's so many instances
where they could have...
Yeah, even the 3DS, like they made fucking
everything. What? They made Metroid. They got them to make Metroid again. That's not
Metroid
3DS games.
Prime Pinball or whatever. Like
Metroid,
they made
shout out to Metroid
that.
Prime Hunters. Well, that was on the normal DS, but yeah, just and Federation Force can't. Rage. Just the sweet rage of that whole announcement. I thought it was hilarious, but anyway. Going back to this game, yeah, like, I can't believe they never made another one. And I didn't know that there was that many entries, not gonna lie.
Mm-hmm.
I always remembered, like, my first exposure to them were the trophies from Super Smash Bros. Melee. And one of them was one of the, like, the characters from Custom Robo. So it always looked cool even then. And I think it was from the N64 one, because I remember the model was not very good. So, yeah, like, it always struck a chord with me visually.
And just going back and like watching the gameplay now, it's like, I would love a new version of this.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, the gameplay is really, I think, unique. Like, there's nothing really that kind of fits where it left off, you know? Like,
yeah.
So basically the gameplay is you are in an arena. Sometimes you'll have like more than two people fighting. Sometimes it'll be like teams, but you'll have at least two people. You start the game in like little tubes, your little robot guy, and then you shoot out. You can shoot wherever you want, basically.
Yeah.
Which is like pretty cool, because like sometimes I would, if I was like heavy on like dash attacks or like shotguns or something, I would always like figure out where they're launching and launch right next to them and just fucking blast them right in the face.
Nice.
So I had this gun towards the end. I'm just gonna jump around here.
Oh, okay, absolutely, like, jump around.
Hopefully this catches your attention. Like, I had this gun towards the end, which basically clowned out everyone except for the last boss, who was fucking the hardest thing I've ever fucking done.
Ridiculousness.
Yes. Mm. But it was a gun that would shoot like three or four swords into the air that would just like hover and then like lock onto the person, just like go at them.
That's rad. Just the image, yeah. The imagery of that is like, is there anything cooler?
Nothing. And like, you would just shoot away into the corner and then just keep spamming your gun, and then the whole sky would be filled with these swords and just fucking like dropping down on them. They wouldn't even have a chance.
Just imagine that in today's graphics. Like, what is happening? I know Nintendo, the reason, you know, they weren't making new F-Zeros is that they think they can't really do anything else with the franchise. Like, they want to constantly be iterating, even when it's not always for the best. They're always iterating. That's the one thing you can give Nintendo, is that they never want to be stagnant. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's like, there's, with, you know, with how action games have changed, it's like, there's obviously things you can do with this.
Oh, definitely. And like, the customization, like, it's pretty deep for a 2004 GameCube game, but like, mm-hmm. there's only, I want to say like 30 something different like robots. Like, you could definitely up that, at least double it, you know? And
yeah,
like,
60 just make robots.
The game bigger.
Yeah. Bigger, and then, but also just, you know, not wanting to be overblown and bloated, I guess. That's always mm-hmm. the struggle. But yeah, just, I guess going with that, back with this game, do you think it benefits from having those RPG elements, or do you think it kind of like bogs down what is the main gameplay, is the combat?
Oh no, it like, the RPG stuff really gives it like its heart, like, okay. Custom robo, like customizing your little robot is pretty much the name. It's literally the name of the game.
Yeah, it's the name of the game.
So yeah, like, the more RPG you can get with that, I feel like the more it like lends itself to the framework of customization.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have stats, like each little, like, so they're called chassis, which is like your actual robot.
Yeah,
like each one will have stats for like the time you get knocked down, like your recovery time, your defense, your speed, your like sky movement, which is like jumping or hovering, and then your attack.
Okay.
So like, it's really like, and that's just your chassis. Like, you have a gun in your right hand and a like a bomb shooter in your left hand, and then a backpack that's just an extra ability. Mm. And then you also can like customize your legs. So like, maybe you just want to fly more. Maybe you just want to run really fast. Like, there's so much customization that like, in like the modern age of RPGs, like the depth, you can really set yourself apart with like. Like, Nintendo doesn't have anything that's this deep, I feel like.
Yeah, no.
Or that can be this deep.
They've doubled down on the easy-to-pick-up stuff. And, like, Breath of the Wild is probably the best example of something that's, like, a really deep, very systems-driven experience. But that's pretty much it. And that was a pretty drastic change from their whole pedigree mm-hmm. beforehand.
So, yeah, and that's, like, that's open-world kind of melding, you know, Western RPGs with Zelda, rather than, like, full-on like a JRPG kind of like deep version. Like, yeah. This is just a deeper Pokemon.
Yeah,
you know, for Pokemon. everyone who's like, oh, Pokemon's just baby's first RPG, like, okay, get custom robo, that's yeah. your next step.
That's middle school.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is probably pretty apt, but you know, it's insane to me that it doesn't have a place in the catalog right now. And I feel like, do you feel like there's a chance? Like, what's the percentage chance that you think that this could come back?
I mean, the fact that the studio hasn't done anything in like 6 years, I don't know. I feel like it's pretty low. I would say if they would have kept referencing Custom Robo in Super Smash Brothers rather than stopping at Melee, like with trophies or, you know, whatever.
I feel like they may have. I don't actually, but I just remember it leaving a mark on me with Melee. I don't know if they have discontinued it or not.
I think reading in the Wikipedia, that was the last time they did it.
Oh, okay.
But that's if bizarre. There's like a Mii costume, like, I'll be wrong on that. But I'm pretty sure they kind of just like are not really acknowledging that this is something that exists at this point.
Like F-Zero, like all these other things that they're just leaving alone.
I mean, F-Zero at least has Captain Falcon, you know? Like, it has representation that people know.
So why didn't they get put into Smash Ultimate? Why is there no chassis in Smash Ultimate?
Honestly, like,
that would be such a cool fighter. That would be so cool.
It just like kind of Pokemon Trainer. It's just so similar, and it's, you know, I mean, there's still DLC fighters coming out. Maybe they'll put out, you know, Ray from Custom Robo and be like, hey, Custom Robo game on Switch, come in 2020, get ready.
Backwards compatibility for GameCube is finally here. It's not going to happen. But
no, never.
Unless they add it to their online service, which I would hate. Like, I just want to play them downloaded offline. But anyway, we'll worry about that another day.
Yeah. I mean, if we ever get to, you know, GameCube, what's it called, Virtual Console, and you have the chance to play this game, I would say 100% do it. Like, it's awesome. It's pretty quickly done. And like, once you beat it, there's just another kind of like new game plus mode. And then a mode where you're just doing like, you're just playing through tournaments basically with like harder fighters.
That's cool. Yeah. There's plenty to eat on there, or to chew on rather. So yeah, if it does on the unlikely chance get re-released or it's revitalized as
the series remaster,
you'd want this one out of all of them remastered?
I mean, I mean, this is the only one I played.
That's fair.
And I feel like the rest of them are, you know, like there's a Nintendo 64 version, there's like a DS version, blah blah blah. Like, this is probably the most comparable to a modern console game.
Okay. Then that's definitely where I would lean. It looks sleek, even for the time. Like, it, a lot of games from that whole era, there's like most of them who really do not hold up, but this one, the ones that have the more stylized visuals, they definitely hold up better. Mm-hmm. And you wouldn't really have to do much to really breathe new life into them visually, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't look great, but like, you know, you would just have to go into it with the mindset that I'm playing a GameCube game, you know?
But, and a lot of GameCube games are gorgeous, but yeah, that one definitely just leads into the more minimalist graphics. It probably didn't get that big of a budget. It was a pretty small team, right?
I mean, I looked at how big the team is today, or at least the last time it was reported, and it was 25 people. So you can't really do much with that amount of people, except I think they're making like mobile games at this point.
Oh, that's just so sad. Just like,
yeah,
thinking of these all these studios with like great IP that just go on to just make like really uninspired, like soulless mobile cash grabs. It's so sad.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. And like, they're so like coupled with Nintendo. I don't know why Nintendo isn't utilizing them to like at least, you know, put something on the Switch, like have more Nintendo first party stuff.
And they're trying. Like, I'm pretty surprised about how many new IP that they're putting out, like, just, and they're partnering with the right people so far. But yeah, if they have the studio so close to their belt, why not employ them? Like, even just like a smaller project or a downloadable title or something. Like, it doesn't have to be a full $60 retail release.
No, yeah. And like, it doesn't need to have like a full story even. Mm-hmm. I feel like this game could work as just like a $20 or $30 game that is like, you know, like double the amount of items from this GameCube version and just have like a tournament mode, or like kind of like Super Smash Brothers. Like, there's not really a story there, but like you're just playing it because it's a fun like fighter, you know?
Yeah, but what about So I just started the World of Light mode the other night, and I can already not remember the main like big bad guy's name, so I can't even reference it. That's how little of a story there is. It's like,
yeah,
it's like there's that sweet cutscene in the beginning, and then it's just Kirby kind of just waltzing around this green like Mario 3 tile screen of all these levels. But yeah, it could easily just have, you know, here's your versus CPU mode, here's your multiplayer that probably only works a little bit of the time because it's the Nintendo network. But yeah, just something little to satiate it, because Zone of the Enders certainly ain't coming back. So, I mean, and the Daemon X Machina is leaning more toward, like, an armored core.
Yeah, that's a total different...
Yeah, more of a simulation angle, but also very customizable. Like, every element of those games are customizable, so there's a little bit of a Venn diagram with that. But yeah, definitely, ultimately, a very different gameplay edge.
Mm-hmm. What was I gonna say? I feel like this game would be perfect on Switch because, like, you can really lean into local co-op on this.
Yeah, you can, like, here, one Joy-Con. They love using that imagery, even though it sucks to play that way. It's an option.
Absolutely. And, like, I don't know. I just think they're kind of messing up by not, like, making another version on the Switch, because I think it's perfect on the Switch, to be honest.
Just the isometric gameplay. It's not super high up. It's close isometric, and that's very easy to wrap your head around. Even if it was two people playing in co-op next to each other with the Joy-Cons, like, you could all very easily distinguish what's going on. Like, the UI is very simple, you know, scores and all that. Like, it shouldn't be that big of a challenge. Of course, game development is hard, but, like, just it wouldn't be a drastic overhaul to say, like, when Monster Hunter went from portable to console, it's like that was a drastic change. No, they're just basically do the same thing again, but with more features.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like I feel like at least in the GameCube version, like the more like graphical intensity was pushed onto like the gameplay part rather than like the overworld, like run into people and fight them part.
Yeah, it wasn't very good looking in that regard.
Yeah. So like when you're playing the game, like, that's really when you're like fighting the robots, that's really where it needs to shine. Like, it doesn't need all of that stuff on top.
Like, it's okay to just have the static text image with the character's face with like a mild emotion, maybe. Like, you really don't need all that much. Or acting, really. Maybe in the combat, just like call, it's like, ha! You know, like the attacks. But you really don't need a full voice cast and a full story, like a Fire Emblem level. You really don't need that at all.
No, yeah. I mean, you played Super Mario Odyssey, like, how much talking was in that, you know?
Yeah, now that you mention it, I mean, there's always those little blurbs from characters, but yeah, there's probably more than usual, except for maybe Sunshine. Sunshine, like, people just would not stop talking. Like, that one's probably the most dialogue-heavy one. I'll go down. Sunshine is probably the best Mario story, but that's of course, saying very little.
Yeah,
it's not saying anything at all, really. So yeah, it's really surprising that the Ray isn't in Smash at this point. Like, even like Brawl, like, I feel like they were doing weird stuff. Like, I'm surprised they just didn't pick him out. But I don't know if people don't really care about the IP anymore. But that's a way to like renew interest in the IP too. So it's like they could have a chance to revitalize it, and they didn't or haven't yet.
Exactly, this IP could totally exist in 2019. Like, I see kids playing with Beyblades like all the time, and that was something that was around when I was like 6 years old.
Yeah,
like
I never thought that would come back. Like, when that first kind of like faded away, or at least I like grew out of it, like, I never thought that was gonna continue. I thought that was just one of those, like, you know, the toy anime that always just come and go in droves. But no, it's still here, and I've seen kids playing it. It's like, wow, it's nuts.
No, yeah, this is just like one of those toy anime shows, but like, no toys alive, it's just the video game.
Oh, they could do it with fucking amiibos too. They can make amiibos,
dude. Yeah,
they can make Nintendo. So much money. That's like an entire line of its own, like all these little chassis or whatever they're called.
You are so right. Oh, custom robo could be the way you push amiibos. No, dude,
I just got a bazillion dollar idea. So, you know how some like toy lines, they would do like a piece of a larger character in a bunch of different things.
Yes.
You put a custom robo part in a bunch of the other amiibos, so then you could like put them together differently and emphasize that customization element, and then there's like an extra rarity on top of it, and then the amiibo guys just like jerk off all over it because it's that they never see anything like it. It's like double the rarity. Nintendo. Just do amiibos. Don't even do the game. Fuck it.
Look, Reggie's gone. Like, you can start fucking around now.
You can do anything. Okay. Anything. I miss Reggie. Like, I already miss Reggie a lot. Just, it's good. E3's gonna be really weird without him. But he was probably why. He's probably like, no, I don't like this.
I don't like custom aggressive. Robo.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Not enough.
I need to play Animal Crossing.
Yeah, not enough.
This is Nintendo 3DS.
My new Nintendo 3DS, too.
Oh, bless his heart.
Doug Bowser, get fucking
Doug on. Bowser probably fucking loves Custom Robo.
Yeah, he's the anti-Reggie.
He's the total yin-yang of Reggie. And I love
how
he's
like
just
this guy in a light, and I don't really know him.
Yeah, we don't really know how he's going to personally personify himself, except that he's just totally doubled down on the whole Bowser thing. He's just like tying up fucking stuffed Mario's and Luigi's.
Kinky. We'll see at E3 how we feel about this dude.
I'm really
if he brings custom Robo back, I'm all in on.
Imagine that fucking Nintendo Direct. We got Metroid Prime Trilogy on Switch, and then we got custom Robo.
Hell.
And
yes.
Then you know what? Just give it to him. Pokemon Snap 2, and then I don't really give a shit, but they'll enjoy it. They'll do the thing. Which is another one. It's like, you've had better applicable or more applicable hardware to do this Pokemon Snap since they haven't done it. So yeah, Nintendo doesn't know what they're doing. Or they do know and they're all smarter than us, which is probably the case.
It's true. I couldn't run Nintendo.
Reggie held the door for 15 years or whatever.
You need that big body.
Yeah, I need that big body.
Here into JRPGs that are like also action games that are also kind of like fighting games, you know, this is the game for you.
Yeah, and in the era...
I've done that shoots swords.
That's like, I mean, what more do you need?
No, wait, okay, so there's this thing called a pod that shoots, it's like an ability kind of thing with like a cooldown.
Yeah.
There's a thing called a dolphin pod.
What?
It shoots like virtual dolphins that will like dolphin jump and attack your opponent.
PETA would not like that.
I don't care.
I don't care either, but that, imagine, PETA Twitter account somehow verified. This fucking horrible demonic video game allows you to kill hopeless dolphins.
Shut down Nintendo. The most innocent of the creatures on Earth.
The most docile and beautiful, pure creatures that'll fucking eat your balls off if they get the chance. Dragon's Dogma is an action RPG developed by Capcom that released in May of 2012. Even though we're coming up on its 7th anniversary with the recent Switch re-release, there's no better time to play this absolute jewel of an RPG. Alright, I know you have questions. Lay them all on me. I'm ready to go.
Alright, so first off, I just gotta say, Dragon's Dogma, no idea what that means. Like, I've heard the word dogma before.
Here's the thing, honestly, we're gonna break this down. We're going to break this down. So dragon refers to the titular antagonist, the generic dragon character that I don't know if he has a name. And then,
so there's only one dragon in this game?
So there's like drakes and stuff, but like in terms of like legitimate dragons, there's one. And he's the final boss. Unless you can count the expansion as afterward, but that's neither here nor there.
Okay.
Dogma, as defined by Merriam-Webster himself, or herself, I don't really actually know. Something held as an established opinion, or a code of such tenets. So, like, a point of view or tenet put forth as authoritative. So, the crux of the story is that the dragon, in one of the very first scenes, after the first flashback scene happens...
All right.
Sticks his big fat dragon nail in the main character's heart that you create through probably one of the best customization systems ever. It's insane how many characters you can make, but he basically takes his heart out, kind of like dragon heart.
Okay.
And he is basically bound to him through some magical curse or whatever that he spills fantasy jargon at you, and then all of a sudden that's the way it is. So
the dragon can talk.
The dragon can talk, but it's in like a raw,
like Smaug.
Kind of like Smaug, except not as good at all. It's not nearly as effective. See, I don't really know what the name correlates. That was a really long-winded way of saying I have no idea what the title means.
Fair enough. And I think we can just go ahead and include the Dark Arisen expansion, you think?
Yeah, yeah, it's more of a like a end game, like high level area. But yeah, there's not too much going on there.
Okay, because I think if you're going to buy it in 2019, like that's pretty much the only way you can get it.
Unless you want to get the version that the servers are shut down and everything, then I would not recommend that.
Okay. So I gotta ask, tell me about this pawn system.
Okay, so the pawn system is very cool. If you play online, which you should play online on this one, I know like most single player games do not need to be connected to online or whatever, but this actually changes it a lot.
Okay.
So a little bit into the game, you get to create your own pawn, which is basically like your party members, but instead they're like brain dead slaves. So they do anything you want, and they basically follow your command without any question whatsoever, and they're completely emotionless.
All right.
Except, and then they give you the most mundane and terrible advice all the time. That's like super obvious. It's like,
kinda like
fire burns you, and they're like, of course, but then they say it like dozens of times in a minute, and you're like, and then you hear it so much that you just, your brain breaks, and then it becomes endearing. This is the cycle of Dragon's Dogma. Anyway,
awesome.
So you make one pawn, you can choose basically the entire customization of your own character. You basically can redo, so you have just as much choice in appearance and what classes that they pick in the beginning. So there are three classes. There's the Strider, which is like uses knives and a bow and arrow. And then there's the like the mage and then the warrior. So like warrior uses sword and shield at first, and the mage uses, you know, staff, Gandalf staff, and he flings spells. And then each of the class has like basically a subclass where it kind of leans deeper into different like talents. For example, there's the sub of the Strider is the Ranger, which is basically all bow and arrow. They get like a longbow, and then the I can't remember exactly what it's called. The warrior is the subclass of fighter. So fighter is the initial one that you get to choose. And then warrior basically wield like this like giant longsword. And so on and so forth. And then like sorcerer who doesn't even use a staff or anything. And just assassin, magic archer. It gets kind of nuts. So you have you have a wide variety of choices when it comes to aesthetic and gameplay. So you build your first pawn. And you get the option to share it with the... like the online community, and other players can see your pawn that you've leveled up and you've come and you've taken on quests and take that into their own party. So you have a party of four altogether, your player character, your player character's pawn, and then two recruited pawns that they don't level up with you, but your partner one does. So that's the one that's going to stick with you the whole game. But you're otherwise, you're constantly swapping out these pawns for new ones that have leveled up and that have seen more. And the quest that you go on with your pawn, that'll constantly level it to up 2. So it's not going to be like a level 1 version. It's going to be whatever the most recent one is, if that makes sense. And also, it'll remember what quest you go on. So then it has the potential to, in someone else's game, kind of guide you or give you directions on the current quest or like the weaknesses of the enemies you're going to face. So it takes all of your experience and it boils down to a character that other people can use without even knowing you. Which is pretty cool.
That is just so much, and I can't believe, like,
yeah,
when did this game come out?
2012.
Like, that's not like too long ago, no, but still, like, I can't believe they were able to do that then. Like, yeah. I can't imagine a game now kind of doing that, you know.
And I hope all of you DMC fans are enjoying Devil May Cry 5, because we could be playing Dragon's Dogma 2 right now. He got the director got the choice to make Dragon's Dogma 2 or DMC 5, and he made DMC 5, which is probably the right choice. Like, everyone's eating that game up. It looks awesome. But
it looks pretty good.
In another alternate universe, we could be playing Dragon's Dogma 2 right now, and we could be seeing the evolution of the pawn system and all the other gameplay elements that all other games should be stealing from it, and they don't.
Do you think he's working on Dragon's Dogma 2?
I think so. I would put money that that's the project that's being worked on. He wants to do it really bad. He just wanted to do a DMC first because it would be, it'd been like a ridiculous amount of time.
Okay.
Like over 10 years or something. Yeah, over 10 years.
I could see like a new Dragon's Dogma being pretty crazy with the way like Capcom is like doing Monster Hunter World with all those crossovers.
Like Capcom is on the top of their game lately. Like the Monster Hunter World is like their most successful product ever. They got DMC5, which is completely like harkening back to, you know, what people love about action, you know, character action games without any of the fluff or anything like that. And then Resident Evil, you know, going back to its roots with 7, and then going back to one of the most, you know, highly requested remakes with 2, and knocking it out of the park. It's like they're only on an upward trajectory, and Mega Man 11 coming out and not being terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're absolutely killing it lately, and I have pretty high hopes that we're gonna see a sequel to this probably a little bit into the next gen. Just thinking about what it could look like with the next hardware, I'm just like, holy crap, there's so much potential here.
Mm-hmm. Did this game come out on like current gen consoles besides Switch?
Yes, it got released 3 times technically. So it came out first for PS3 and 360, and then I believe PC, and then later, and then by the time it got PC, it had the Dark Arisen. So after the first release, it's just Dragon's Dogma and Dark Arisen.
Okay.
And that's for the current gen consoles, the PC and the Switch. Now the Switch is apparently like a middle ground. Like it has worse pop in than the regular on the current gen console versions. Like it's really really bad in the original, but then it's like also really bad in the Switch one, which is kind of weird. And like this is one of the games that it doesn't bother me. Like that's like one of the worst things to me in games. Like it takes me out immediately when characters will just like be right in front of you. And like I hate that stuff, but like it's just like something about this game's like quirky and weird aesthetic and the characters that say the same shit over and over again, like it's all kind of mishmashed into something. You're like, I shouldn't like this, but I can't help it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah,
no, everything I've heard just like reinforces like that quirkiness, it's where it's
goofy.
Like
it's goofy,
it's but it's annoying at first, but then you just love it.
Yeah, it's like it's just like wolves hunting packs. It's like you hear this shit like over and over and over again, and you can disable it if it really bothers you. But I can't help it. At least in the first few hours of the game when it starts out, it's just like all those like masterworks all you can't go wrong. Like it's just you hear them all just over and over and over again. And Netflix announced that they're gonna do an anime, and I really hope it's in 2D and not 3D like Berserk. Because it could be really cool otherwise. But yeah, just like, I can't imagine that being good without them completely hamming it up and going goofball with it. Because that's so crucial to what makes this game so good.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to the combat and everything, like, it needs to be hammy. It needs to be silly. At least in moments.
I just started watching the Castlevania anime last night. And like, I'm almost done. I don't want it to go that
dark.
It's like,
that's dark. Like that's probably the best use of Castlevania. So are you in the first season?
I just started the second season.
The second season, okay. Yeah, like it is messed up. It doesn't need to go there. Like it just it needs to be. So what I love about the like general like aesthetic and feel of everything, it's a Japanese take on like European fantasy.
Oh yeah.
And so
absolutely.
It's like totally through the lens of Japan, but it's using all of those tropes and just like the, you know, the warriors, mages and rogues classes basically, and like the whole like the D&D kind of rules for how things are supposed to work, and then just like hamming it up to 11, like having you like climb on monsters and like using all these crazy combos and throwing, you know, whipping swords around you. So you get that crazy ass Japanese action, but with the look of, you know, a very traditional fantasy game, and that's what really sets it apart, because I really can't think of any other Western RPG that has a combat system as good as this game's.
Mm-hmm.
And it is very similar to Monster Hunter, but, you know, since that's focused on co-op, it's inherently different. But yeah,
it looks
a lot faster, and you know, just like you can physically grab onto the monsters and climb up on them. Like one of the first monsters you encounter in the world is just like a Cyclops, and just you get like this little, you know, a fairly large area to fight around in, but yeah, you want to be getting on it and like climbing up to its head and like slashing it in the face and just like picking out to the weak points. So they're not just basically bigger bricks to fight with and watch a health bar go down. Like, they actually feel like you're fighting that monster. Like, you know, you're shooting arrows at its eye, you're, you know, dodging it when it's, you know, slopping down on you. Like, each creature feels like a wholly unique experience, and that's why I feel like the combat holds up so well, because they make sure every encounter, and the game's not that big in terms of space, so that they're able to, like, kind of focus it. Mm-hmm. And that's my main worry with a new game, is that they're going to make it, like, gigantic open world. It's like, no, it was really good that the areas were much more, like, smaller and more confined and more articulate.
Yeah, I think, I hope, like, if they do go forward with this, it seems, it kind of, like, follows the path that Monster Hunter's going. Like, yeah. At least that kind of structure, but, like, gameplay that fits with this style. Like, well, it's made by the Devil May Cry guys, so, yeah. You know, closer to Devil May Cry, it seems like they kind of lean towards the Monster Hunter.
It's like a weird middle ground, because it's not as good as Devil May Cry, but it's also, you know, taking into part a bunch of different character classes and different weapon types and everything. So it is a role-playing game, and it's trying to manage that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it would probably be smart for them to follow the Keanu Games of Service Monster Hunter model, because that's really successful for them, and they're actually one of the only studios doing it right now. Because, mm-hmm. like, people are just still eating that game up, and they're still continuing to support it with the new expansion that got announced today at the State of Play thing. Like, people are still playing that game. You know, they're doing all the... Like, they did the Devil May Cry event, they did the Witcher event, like, they're doing these cool crossovers and keeping the community engaged. And that probably would be something good for Monster Hunter. They actually, or for Dragon's Dogma, excuse me, they made an MMO. So there's a Dragon's Dogma, like, MMO that's only available in Japan.
Yeah, so, I was going to ask if you checked that out.
No, I haven't fully checked it out. It looks, you know, it looks fine. I guess it's, you know, it's just overly grindy and has a lot of the same problems as every MMO has. So I haven't really, like, there's a way to play it here, but it's just too much of a pain for me to play, you know, even more shallow elements of just this game. I just played this game again, because each class feels like you're playing an entirely different game. So the replay value is immense.
I was going to ask, do you have a favorite class or, like, anything you would recommend to someone who just wants to, like, check it out?
It depends on what you're playing on. If you're playing on PC, I would definitely say go with the Strider. Just being able to more accurately use the bow and arrow and couple with the daggers is a ton of fun. The Strider is probably my favorite, because you do get best of both worlds. The other classes, they can kind of feel samey. You know, when you're just a sword and shield character, there's only so much shield bashing you can do before it gets tiring. But when you have, you know, you're juggling between basically two different combo sets. So every character, you can basically purchase moves as you level up. That's your main method of getting more powerful. You're actually getting more powerful through experience and not just giving you more stats.
Mm-hmm.
So you get new moves, and they, you know, take up, you know, different controls. So, like, the controls, it would probably look really daunting, but it all feels very intuitive. So you're basically equipping different moves to buttons. So you can have, like, you know, this is going to be my R1 button or so on or so forth. So, yeah, you're kitting your character out to do moves that you have realized that you needed in the battles beforehand. So you already are building up, like, this almost your own mental bestiary of how to take down these different creatures and everything. And, like, what moves work. Because you're... For example, like the harpies, they'll swing down at you, and one of the moves you want to get for the warrior is when you sweep upward. And so it's not quite to the extent of like a Devil May Cry, because there's like tons of moves and stuff to purchase. It's a little bit more streamlined, but also takes into account all the different classes. So probably if you combine all the different classes in one, it probably is comparable or exceeds a Devil May Cry in terms of depth. But for an RPG, and, you know, one that's under the guise of a Western RPG, there's nothing like it.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like each kind of class has its own way of dealing with certain enemies, like, in its kind of unique style, huh?
Yeah, and that's why the pawn system is so cool, because you're constantly being able to switch out and see those moves in action. You could see a pawn use a move you might not have unlocked yet and want to, like, go out and unlock it. So, yeah, so you want to constantly be changing out, rather than, like, let's say, like, a Dragon Age, like Inquisition, like, you kind of find your group and you kind of stick with them, and you gear their actions and behaviors toward your strategy that you just kind of rinse and repeat, and it manages to keep itself fresh by not letting you really rinse and repeat unless you somehow are managing to find replacement pawns that were exactly what you wanted in the first place. So you're basically just doing the same, but at least when you're online, there's enough of a variety. I don't know how the Switch community is, but at least with the PC one, there's enough of a variety of different kinds of pawns to grab. Mm-hmm. So you're constantly seeing new stuff and you're seeing new characters and new moves.
Okay. So yeah, we talked about like how it kind of is like a Western type of setting, but yeah, I saw it took like they took inspiration from like Elder Scrolls and Fable. Do you think like they would, if they made it in the next let's say Dragon's Dogma 2,
yeah,
probably what they're not gonna call it, I don't know,
Dogma Darker, I don't know, something they're gonna, it should, I kind of want a subtitle rather than just a numbered sequel, but
yeah,
I just think numbered sequels are less exciting than a subtitle, but that's neither here nor there.
Do you think with their next iteration they're gonna take from like more modern RPGs, like Witcher just blew up, and yeah, they even have Geralt in Monster Hunter.
Monster
like
Hunter. Yeah, there's always that. There's already that relationship between mm-hmm. CD Projekt and Capcom. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you see them taking anything from like more modern Western RPGs, like they took from Elder Scrolls and Fable, besides the setting?
So yeah, I could see how the Elder Scrolls was always a lot more, at least before Skyrim. Skyrim was very much in the Game of Thrones style, very like cold and a very like muted color palette. But beforehand, Elder Scrolls was very vibrant and colorful, and like you were existing in this like almost alien world, especially with Morrowind. So mm-hmm. rather than Dragon's Dogma is very kind of like washed out, like it's trying to emulate kind of like a realistic color palette, I would definitely go for something a little bit more bombastic and colorful, closer to like a Monster Hunter, because I love the tone of that game, just because they're all like having a blast while they're hunting these like giant, you know, just absolutely horrific beasts.
Yeah, like, this it's like great. A game within
yeah,
a game.
Yeah,
it's basically.
Like they're always like smiling and like they're having a blast doing it, and like they're just like used to it. Like they're just, this is fine. Like I think if you just kind of even more double down in that sillier, the goofier aspects, I think you're, you know, play on, you know, fantasy tropes and, you know, crack some, maybe not jokes, but, you know, have some dialogue kind of like basically, you know, hamming up all of the fantasy things that we've just been done to death at this point. So yeah, make it okay. A little bit more colorful. I would love to also see, yeah, if they just kind of doubled down and did like a really like dark fantasy, like Witcher, Game of Thrones, like kind of aesthetic. I think that'd be really interesting, but still kept the crazy high octane action and then have like this weird contrast, which might be actually be more faithful to the original, because yeah, it was visually pretty scaled back and pretty minimalist, but then once the action starts, it's absolutely mania. So yeah, I would probably go opt for something a little bit sillier and more colorful.
Okay.
If it were my choice.
Also, is it like Monster Hunter in the sense that you are basically going out to hunt like a giant thing, or are you going out into this world and like you'll run into bandits and then you gotta kill the bandits, mm-hmm. but your mission is to just like go do something, and then besides, like, you know, the end goal is to kill this dragon. Yeah.
So
is there any, yeah, how's that,
sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but it is very much like quest driven. So like you'll get pretty like at the beginning it's like kill 10 rabbits. And this, it's like the most mundane shit, but once you actually get out into the world and you're, you know, you're coupling with all these different mechanics and party choices and all these things, that it actually ends up becoming really compelling. And then, mm-hmm. yeah, by the end, you're going on like these like very like long distance, you know, treks across the map. You're running out, you're barely making it to the place with enough stamina, and then before you know it, you're charging a castle and there's like armies of goblins like you're fighting, and there's like the when the one cyclops was a threat, now there's like five of them on the field, and there's like cannon fire going above you, and like it just, so it goes from like the most like modest and easy to wrap your head around stuff to just absolutely epic shit, like just like the monsters and the dragons. Oh, my mistake, there are other dragons, but they're a lot smaller than the main mm-hmm. one. I just remembered, like, one of the coolest moments that I kind of hate to spoil actually is that, you know, you'll just be like out in the wilderness and all of a sudden this big old dragon like flies above you, and like it kind of parks down like by a river, and it's like it looks like it's like drinking out of it or something. And then, like, these bandits come down, and they try to take it down, and the dragon just, like, whoops all their asses. And, like, I don't know if this is, like, a scripted event or something that just, like, happens, but, like, it makes the world feel pretty alive, even though there's a lot of just kind of like walking and nothing's happening. So that's one thing I'll say is like the pacing isn't very good at times. It's like when you're in combat, it's a blast, but then you'll just be kind of like walking for long stretches, and there'll be like caves to explore, or like other like random monster encounters, and you're like finding the Cyclops in the middle of just nowhere and toward the beginning, or you know, going on to where you know your quest is, but you get distracted along the way with like these other creatures, and then you realize you're not leveled up enough. And that's another thing. This game does not care about you. You adapt to its rules or you will die. My first playthrough actually I totally broke it. So there's a quest board right in the very, very beginning, as soon as you get basically control, that you can complete. And without the experience you get from those quests, you're pretty much worthless for a really long time. And I thought it was just really hard. But then I went back, I was like, oh, wait, there's this quest board here, and I did those. And then instead of just like going from main quest point to main quest point, you really have to soak up the area and do as much as you can before traversing. You need to be leveled up or you're not going to do well. And another fault of it is that it kind of points you to do exactly that, just to go to the main quest points, when really you need to just stop and take a second, explore, you know, find quests, do things for people and everything else. And I guess another thing people will kind of like harp on is it gets really easy, so it'll start out pretty tough. And then, but once you're by the end, like you're a god, like you can just take down anything. Which is pretty gratifying, and I like it a lot. But I guess if you're not a fan of uneven skill gaps and like difficulty hikes, then that's something to look out for with this one. But yeah, you if you plan your characters wrong, or you just you refuse to do some side quests, and you're not leveled up enough, like you will get your. There's no way you're gonna be able to succeed. And I kind of respect that. Like, a lot of games, very hand-holdy, but this one's like, oh, this is how we're going to tell you. We're just going to just completely annihilate you with these monsters that you can't possibly hope to defeat. And then you'll come back, with, like, way better weapons, and you'll just, like, take them all out, like, instantly. Like, it's so gratifying. Especially after the Dark Arisen expansion, you just come back, and the main world is just an absolute, just a slaughterhouse for all the creatures and goblins and stuff. And there are bandits that'll fight you, but probably my favorite combat encounter, there's like this fortress on the side of this road that you're supposed to get through, and depending on which gender you pick for your character, they're basically like an all-female band. So if your character is female, they won't attack you, but if you're a male character, like they'll jump you and like try to like rob you. And also another way that your character creation affects everything is like if your character is like larger physically, there's going to be some ledges and things that you can get up to, that if you're a smaller character, you can climb, you can, crawl under things. So it's like, it makes your character creation not just be aesthetic. So everything this game has some kind of mechanical or systemic purpose, which I really appreciate. Just like having to think like, oh, if my character is, small and female, he could probably sneak by these bandits and not start a fight. But if there is, or if you're a male character, like you're going to get your ass kicked. So that's also another thing that makes the replay value go up tremendously.
Yeah, it sounds super deep and like very much like heavy into classic like D&D type RPG stuff.
And it doesn't shout at your face. It these things happen. Like it very much teaches by showing and doing and making you.
It's organic.
It's organic. It's organic in the sense that like when you're first experiencing it, after that it's very much like it follows the specific beats every time. But the first time, like, it just, there's a very dynamic feel to the world. Even though it's not a very big one, there's these things happening that are genuinely interesting and are genuine sights. And things that are compelling. And the day and night cycle actually matters, in that it's kind of like Dying Light, where at nighttime, like, the enemies will come after you and it's a nightmare. So it makes you manage your travel with both your stamina bar, which goes down the further you go without resting at an inn, or just being able to even survive the night in the first place. So you kind of have to manage, I'm close to this town, I probably can do like this quest before nightfall, or this quest but not on both. And then you're judging time and your characters and your stamina and where you are in position to the world, so you really get a very concrete and organic feeling of presence. Like, you feel where you are, who you are, all really matters, ultimately, when most games, they're just vanity.
Dude, like, how is this game so deep and but 2012 and like nothing after the expansion or whatever, like it's just been dormant, being ported to other things. Like, I think I'm ready to try it.
You really? I sold you?
I think so.
Okay.
I think so.
The reason that they were able to get away with all this is because it looks like dog shit. It's like it's like one of the ugliest games ever. It has like moments of beauty. There's like moments of like landscapes and like, you know, like the Godreads will be coming through and it looks really nice. And then like you'll see some of these characters' faces and you're like, oh my god, like what are you? And yeah, like just the repeated voice lines and the, you know, the bugs and kind of like the pop in. And like, it's probably like the most unpolished masterpiece of all time. It's really not polished at all. And I'm surprised even with these re-releases that some of this stuff hasn't been fixed, especially like the pop in. Like, I don't see. That's actually why. So the engine that they used was not designed for open world, so they were pushing it to its complete limit. And so things, were just like popping in, and it should have never been made on this engine. But this engine also created this beautiful, horrific masterpiece. So yeah, it's rough around the edges, but once you really get into it, you'll come out with probably one of the most rewarding and satisfying RPGs you could possibly play. And like it has a really core but devoted fan base. For a reason.
Oh yeah, Austin Walker, Patrick Klepek, huge giant fans.
Yeah, it's like you talk to someone about this game and like I guarantee you like their face will like light up, because like it does that to people, and it did for me. Like I was hooked for so long, and there's just so much to unpack. There's so many different ways to play it, and it's like you can definitely find a fun niche. Like personally, I don't really like how the mages feel. But you go on YouTube and find like videos of high level mages just completely annihilating everything with like these crazy ass spells, and you're like, this is so cool. And I can't wait to see what a sequel brings to the formula, because I feel like there's significant room for improvement, but there's also immense meteoric potential with this IP. And I'm hopefully the funding from all these different releases has given them enough cause to say, yes, we should make the sequel, and that people do want it.
Yeah, I hope if they do make a sequel that they kind of keep the heart of it and the things that people love, because a lot of it was pretty like revolutionary, I feel like, or at least unique to the game. But and not like, I hope they don't go too heavy into like, oh, what's popular right now, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Just keep that really unabashedly Japanese and silly core to it. Even if some of that stuff wasn't intentional, like it's caught on now with like the memes and stuff, and, you know, like all, you know, the Masterworks All and Wolves, you know, Wolf Sunday packs and all that shit. So like people love that stuff, and maybe add more of it, a little bit more variety in like the voices and stuff. But yeah, just kind of go nuts. Use, you know, the new, either the RE engine, which is gorgeous. Oh my gosh. Just imagining a sequel in that engine does just, the DMC5 like character models are insane. It's absolutely insane. Just imagining like one of the horrible, grotesque character creation protagonists walking out, and just like, but with that level of fidelity. Yeah, but like better than Dark Souls. I'm really hoping in like the next, like hopefully like 2 or 3 years, we see something, because that would be amazing for like PS5 and Xbox 2 or whatever.
Me too. Hope we see something on E3.
That would be sick. That would be insane.
Yes.
I would lose my shit. This is a lose my shit level E3 announcement.
E3 is going to be big this year. I can feel it.
Yeah, even without PlayStation doing a conference, like there's going to be some big shit. And we're going to see more Cyberpunk. We're going to see a lot of shit. And I'm very excited. And if Capcom wants to drop this bomb out,
do it.
Please.
What else do you have, Capcom? What else are you working on? Just us know.
I mean, hopefully a Street Fighter that people like. That's their one thing this generation. They haven't been able to nail their fighting games, which is kind of
true.
Yeah, like Marvel MVC was not good.
No. Trash.
Yeah, just come out of the gate with a more polished, but still quirky and goofy, maybe a little bit more colorful, or not. Just go crazy, you know, very realistic Witcher, Game of Thrones kind of look. I'm down with whatever, to be honest. And yeah, just come out of the gate swinging, have a really bombastic battle be your E3 coverage, and just kind of cut to black to show the title screen with a release window. That would be the ideal announcement. And I just play this game. It has such a dedicated following for a reason. It's one of the best action RPGs you can possibly play right now. It's available everywhere at this point. There's really no reason not to.
All right. Any last words besides listen to the theme like intro menu music.
Oh my god, this, thank you so much, I totally forgot about it. The menu of the okay, this is like a George Lucas edit level terrible mistake.
So I've heard.
This would be like if you made Darth Vader say no at the end of Return of the Jedi for some reason. Like, it's that bad. So the main menu theme for the original release is the greatest song ever recorded by humans. And they, for some reason, it's fucking awesome. And it's like corny and cheesy and in the best, most Japanese way possible.
What you listening to, son?
I don't think you like it.
Well, why not? I like this new generation of music.
But that's what the game is to me, and it works. And the re-release, there's like this very like stereotypical like piano, like it's all instrumental. If they came out, they put the trailer of Dragon's Dogma 2 to the original song. Like, I hopefully it's like a rights issue and not a creative issue. I would be, you know, I'd be a little bit more easy to swallow. But if they just consciously took it out for no reason, like, I'd be mad. I don't actually know. I don't think that's information is available, but I would piss me off.
I don't recall.
I hope it's not like a rights issue, because if they can, because people love that song too. Like, that's synonymous with this game. It's right there with it. And if they can use that in coupling with a new game announcement, they would win the fans over immediately, and also new people, because they would realize that the tone of this game is this song, and it's amazing. And you should always do it. It's called Flying Into Free or something like that.
Listen to that song. I also heard a great suggestion a few weeks ago for the anime to use that as their theme song.
That would be, if okay, also, that's another get hype moment. If that happens, Netflix will have won my heart forever. And if they can somehow make this Witcher show not suck, you'll have a lifetime subscription, because that's like the only two like, I want it for Evangelion and Witcher and Dragon's Dogma, and that's it. So if two out of three of these things are good, I'll be okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that would be, oh my god, just imagining the opening is like, you could do so many, this could be like the best fantasy anime ever. Like, it has that potential if you just are unashamed and unabashed and just do it how people like, and like, you know, what it's known for, I think, is, and just have the crazy action, but then also the silly moments. Like, it's, it should write itself, and I have great, is that gonna be this year?
No idea.
I honestly don't know. But yeah, this has immense potential. And if they just go through the story of the game, like, they could have like a very loose, that's, you know, the loose, like, fan, like going to slay the dragon. It doesn't get more fundamental fantasy than that. So that gives them a lot of room to do really creative and cool stuff with it. Like that quest with, like, where you're storming the castle all of a sudden, and there's like, you know, the only fail state is you having to wait for the kingdom or whatever, their troops to come back and like refight, and then you can go back and take it again. So like, it doesn't just push you back to a continue screen, it makes you live with what happens at all times, which is another really cool thing about it. But yeah, this anime should be awesome. The game's awesome. It's on Switch, it's on PS4, Xbox One. Absolutely give a go if you like Japanese ass games or fantasy games.
Yeah, you have no excuse. It's on the Switch, play it. I'm gonna play it.
Any you're playing on Switch thing?
I think so.
Yeah, it looks good. I've been watching some reviews. I was hoping to review it myself, but it never happened. You know, it's a lot of fun. I feel like it's a perfect game to just like pop in, do some side quests, and turn off. Like, it sounds like a perfect Switch game. I'm pretty excited to get in there eventually. Yeah, give a go. I also want Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning on Switch. Those are my two RPG wishes, and I got one of them. So, again, 50%, not too bad. Any like final questions?
No, I think that's everything. Sweet. I think you sold me.
I'm glad I tried. That was my first thing. I was like, I'm going to get away from this with Eli purchasing a copy, hopefully.
Absolutely.
It's a blast. Yeah, just have fun in that character creator, play online, get some pawns.
Yes, but yeah, yes. Just, again, the
pawns, like, it's so bizarre, because like, the first one you meet, he looks like this weird like Afro Nick Cage. He's just like, he doesn't really say anything. He just kind of like looks at you with like these wide eyes. And then he's like, come with me. And then your adventure begins. And it's glorious. And you fight this like nine-headed snake shit monster. And
oh, God.
It's insane. I'm not going to say anymore, because everything's a spoiler, because everything's amazing. And with that, I think I've said my piece. I finally got it out of me. It's actually, I feel like some weight has been lifted off my shoulders. Because like, it's kind of like the like the wisp monster from Game of Thrones that like kills people. Like it feels like that's been living inside of me for like 2 years, and I've just finally let it out, and it's finally dissipated.
Great analogy.
Yes.
A character we'll never see again.
Yeah, that was rough. I'm enjoying Game of Thrones. I don't know what everyone's problems is. I mean, I know what their problems are, and they're all legitimate, but I'm still enjoying it personally.
It's ending. That's all I can say.
It's regardless or not, it's being put out of its misery. And misery might be probably unfortunately the most accurate term at this point. But anyway, what are we playing next time?
All right. I'm going to hit you with a game that is cemented between a game that everyone loves and a game that has a lot of mixed emotions. Either you hate it or you're like, it wasn't that bad. I'm going to pick Assassin's Creed Brotherhood.
Brotherhood? I'm in the pro camp personally. I thought it was wonderful. Oh shit. That's an unexpected choice. I picked it. I'm going to go with Doom 3 because I feel like I need to give this game another chance.